Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, here we go, live in Los Angeles. It's the Herd, wherever you may be, however you may be listening. iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, FS1. 1 hour from now, not only our Herd hierarchy, but Lincoln Riley, the new USC football coach, will join us live. Very exciting. Joy Taylor's joining me. Just the breadth of all this activity. College football needed a breath of fresh air. It needed some movement. It got too insular. Same teams. We have a chance to see Michigan in the playoff, and Brian Kelly's leaving Notre Dame, and there's great candidates out there, by the way, for Oklahoma and Notre Dame. It's the best candidate year of my life. There's great, great candidates everywhere, and there's still four or five great candidates out there.
I love when things that we've been talking about for years actually happen and then it actually works. And all we've been talking about forever is that you need some parity in college football. You need to spread it around. You need to have the West Coast interested. You need to have some sitting on the edge of your seat about what your coach is going to do, where a player is going to go, the transfer portal. Like it's exploded, and movement is why.
Let's start with this. You know, mobility scares some people. And it clearly rewards others. Years ago, we used to rip NBA players when they choose to control their future and not let an owner or a crappy GM or a bad coach control their future. How dare you not be loyal? And yet today, we look at athletes who don't move, like Bradley Beal, and go, "What are you doing? Go to a better team." Mobility scares many of you. But those willing to push themselves are rewarded. And today, Brian Kelly has a better football job, LSU, because you get better players there. Coaches leave for different reasons. Brian Kelly is 60. He has rebuilt three programs brilliantly. Notre Dame is in the best shape since Lou Holtz was there. But every time he plays Alabama or Georgia or Clemson, he's got by far the second best roster. Because there's that academic thing and that cold weather thing and that rural thing. It's hard to coach at Notre Dame. Brian Kelly told me a decade ago in Texas. He said, "You can't coach here 20 years. At LSU, it is football 24/7. Brian Kelly recently said, "If you're just into football, you can't coach at Notre Dame." He wants to finally go up against Kirby Smart or Dabo Sweeney. He wants to go up against Nick Saban and have as many great NFL players. Because he went to a national final game and got blown out. And then he went to two other playoff games and got blown out in both. And if he played Georgia in this year's playoff, he'd get smoked in that one too. Because Brian Kelly, in a rebuilding year, he told all of us, this is not a playoff team. And yet here they are. He has done everything every school has needed and paid him to do. And for once in his career at 60 years old, "I want to have as good a players as Saban when I play him." But Notre Dame is hard to coach. Not that LSU is easy. It's in the best college football conference. But Louisiana per capita has more NFL players than any state in the union. I kid you not. You can basically only have to leave the state for an occasional offensive lineman. You can get all your players there. Brian Kelly has to get on a plane for every single recruit at Notre Dame. Do they qualify academically? Do they want to play in cold weather? They don't give a rip about Ara Parsegan and Lou Holtz and the Golden Dome and 90% of kids these days. They don't care. I'm 50. I don't care. So it's a good job, and coaches leave for different reasons. Kelly has been banging his head against the wall for years. They used to get mad at him because of the way he looked on the sidelines. Remember that when he first got there? You can't show that kind of emotion. This is too precious, too dignified, too rarefied of air for you. I don't think that's going to be a problem, y'all, at Baton Rouge. He can yell and scream all he wants, like Nick Saban does down the road at Tuscaloosa. You can yell and scream at the, you know, at your players if you get mad. Or, by the way, as Nick Saban does, yell and scream at your coaches. That's who Nick really yells at, his coaches. It's an easier job. The weather, the academic route's a little easier. There's players everywhere. You don't have to fly for every recruit. And by the way, Ed Orgeron, who's leaving LSU, is one of the nation's best recruiters. Brian Kelly sees that pot of gold he's inheriting. They also have a good young quarterback. So for the first time in Brian Kelly's life, when he steps on that campus today, because he's flying there right now, he will have every bit as good a roster as Georgia, Bama, Clemson, and Ohio State. And this guy's been crushing it for 30 years. He owes himself to be challenged. Go ahead, complain about the players. What about the players? What about him? I know Kyle Hamilton, the All-American's going to be a top five pick in the draft. I listened to him this morning. He's all good with it. He gets it. Shock, but gets it. Players now can leave early for the NFL. They can skip bowl games. They can go into the transfer portal. They get paid. Players? Playoffs? Players? Players are fine. Notre Dame players this morning. They're handling it better than the lunatic fans at Notre Dame. Folks, coaches leave for different reasons. Brian Kelly's 60. He doesn't want to be in a golf course in 2 years. If you do, that's fine. But coaches now, players are playing into their 40s. Why can't he coach into his 70s? Belichick's almost 70. He's got 8 years left. Pete Carroll's 70, second highest paid guy in the league. Nick Saban's almost 70. He looks like he could coach another 10 years to me. Brian Kelly doesn't want to sit in a golf course. He wants to challenge himself. He wants to be able to go toe-to-toe with the big dogs and have just as good a staff. His coaching salaries will match everybody. He's going to make his defensive coordinator, Marcus Freeman, if he goes, the highest paid coordinator in America. Just wants to be on an even playing field. And coaches do it for different reasons. Lincoln Riley went to USC. Well, Lincoln Riley's history, his DNA, he grew up in a small little town. And then he goes to Norman, Oklahoma. And the program doesn't really need him. They've always been good at Oklahoma. And he says, I got a beautiful family. Football's entertainment. I want to go try to rebuild the entertainment capital of the world's football program, USC. I'm not going to tell coaches and families what's right for them. I've left four times across the country. I've made the right move three out of the four times. But I know what was good for me more than my critics and Brian Kelly and Lincoln Riley know. The players will be fine. It's the best year for candidates I've ever seen. Oklahoma's going to get a great coach. Notre Dame's going to get a great coach. Washington just got one. Luke Fickell is available. He's still out there. What a great opportunity. Luke Fickell, he's like the fourth best coaching candidate. In any other year, he'd be number one. This year, he's about four. He'd go to Notre Dame and win. Maybe they keep Marcus Freeman. It looks like he'd do well. The players love him. Everybody's going to be okay. Many of you are terrified by mobility. Push yourself. You can also be rewarded by it. So I watched that Seahawk game last night. I am from the Pacific Northwest. That hurt a little. I have been saying this now for several years that Seattle, the Seahawks, are a house of cards. What do they do well besides anything connected to Russell Wilson? And the Pete Carroll-Russell Wilson relationship, it is time to move on. 70-year-old coach, star quarterback. You tell me who wins. I'm not anti-Pete. I'm not trying to be pro-Russell. But last night they had one rushing first down, 34 rushing yards, and 18 minutes of possession. That's what happens when you have, for the fifth year in a row, a bad offensive line, second-tier running backs, a bad secondary. You've whiffed on all but about three draft picks in the last four drafts. You've made weird trades where you traded a safety, a third-round pick, and two firsts for a safety. Big changes are coming. They're inevitable, and you know what side ownership will take. Russell Wilson started this year like he does every year in Seattle. Great. Then he got hurt. They rushed him back. He's not 100%. It is obvious. Now, he didn't play particularly well last night, but this is the first four-game stretch in his career, three-game stretch, where he hasn't looked good. I think he's fine. Pete was fired twice, losing in Seattle before Russell. I trust that Russell Wilson can get healthy and back on track more than Seattle's outdated schemes can be figured out. If you look in the NFL this morning, an offensive coach leads the NFC East, Mike McCarthy. An offensive coach, Matt LaFleur, leads the NFC North. An offensive coach, Bruce Arians, leads the NFC South. An offensive coach leads the NFC West, Cliff Kingsbury. An offensive coach leads the AFC West. The surprise team in the league, Cincinnati, is led by Zach Taylor, an offensive coach. The fastest surging team is San Francisco, led by an offensive coach. That's the new reality. Pete Carroll after the game on their offensive struggles. Here you go.
Film doesn't lie, you know. We're missing some stuff. I don't see indications of that in practice as we're going. And so I gotta go look at the film, you know. We can talk about all the different throws that didn't get where they're supposed to go, but I don't know what to make of it other than the fact we got to keep battling and keep trying to figure it out. I felt like we had some guys open tonight, you know, with some chances, and unfortunately we didn't hook it up.
Listen, Russell didn't play well. It's not all on Pete. Pete's going to be a Hall of Famer. Pete won a national championship. He's going to wear a gold jacket. That's not what I'm saying. But we're going to have a choice here. A star quarterback, an older coach with outdated current schemes. It's inevitable. Relationships, even the great ones that get titles, Belichick, Brady, they don't last forever. Shaq and Kobe, don't last forever. Jordan, Pippen, don't last forever. So when they go sour, you know they're not lasting very long.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
You know, if I could tell you, you're going to make millions owning a waste management company or be an actor and maybe be in the Avengers, what would your kids think is cooler? If you could make millions being Joe Buck and broadcasting the World Series and Super Bowls, or be a really powerful tax litigator, what would your kids think is cooler? It kind of matters, right? There's a lot of ways to be successful. But people move to Los Angeles for dreams because they can succeed elsewhere. But LA is fun. It snowed during Ohio State and Michigan. We don't get that here, or humidity. It's 80 degrees in LA today. And as Lincoln Riley stood atop the USC Coliseum yesterday, the entertainment capital of the world was behind him. USC is struggling now, but the five or six biggest brands in college football are Notre Dame, Ohio State, Michigan, Oklahoma, Alabama, and yes, USC. I know Georgia's good now, but they got one natty. That's it. I know Clemson's good now, but they were invisible for 25 years. USC is a mega brand in the entertainment capital of the world. Hall of Fame, they've got the most ever. NFL players drafted, number one ever until last year. Now they're second. Heisman's six, and with Lincoln Riley, put another five on the board in the next decade. Right in downtown Los Angeles. From San Diego to Los Angeles to Santa Barbara, east of Palm Springs, you never have to get on a plane and you'll have a top five recruiting class. When Pete Carroll was here, he had one rule for leaving the state. He would only recruit players out of the state if they were, in his mind, first round picks. Brian Cushing, like a Mike Williams, remember the wide receiver? Otherwise, there was no reason to leave. You don't even need Texas. And Texas has great players. You don't even need Georgia. And Georgia's got great players. You occasionally sprinkle in a Florida kid, and it's all good. This is a great job that's down. Alabama was down. Oklahoma's been down. Ohio State briefly's been down. Michigan's been down. But boy, you don't rebuild these big brands. You just reboot them. Here's Lincoln Riley yesterday.
Everything intrigued me. It did. I think the location, I think the history of the program, I think the opportunities here to recruit and build a national championship level roster, the opportunity for my family to live in a new place, to experience new things. I think, you know, I've got two young girls, as you mentioned, and for them to be able to experience different things in this life is very, very important for me and my wife. And so we've always kind of been people, we're not scared to take a risk. You know, we're not scared to, I don't see this as a risk, but we're not scared to take a jump. And this was the right time.
And Oklahoma's going to be just fine, because Oklahoma football is always just fine. By the way, side note, not a big deal, but I've been a USC fan for years. You live in Los Angeles. It's kind of cool, right? Like, college programs are usually in the sticks, right downtown LA. USC's got the easiest schedule I've ever seen next year. They don't play Oregon or Washington. Notre Dame's at home. They play Rice and then Fresno State, which now just lost their entire staff. If you've ever wanted to be eased in to a job, and the Pac-10 has been circling the drain for 4 to 5 years, it's not going to take long.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
He's Mike Harmon. I'm Dan Byer. We have a brand new fantasy football podcast called I Want Your Flex. Twice a week, every Tuesday and Friday, we come up with new episodes to not only look back at what happened, what you need to do at that minute, and also look ahead of what's coming up in the fantasy football world.
That's right, Dan. Every week we're going to scour the waiver wire to find the pickups to turbo boost your fantasy lineup, sits, starts, fantasy football players' rankings to get you ready to dominate the competition.
Listen to I Want Your Flex with Mike Harmon and me, Dan Byer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, and wherever you get your podcasts.
So Brian Kelly is going to LSU, a sudden move. I know a lot of people think it's a money move, but he's going to make about $9 million, $9.5 million. He was making about $6.5 million. It's not a money move. Brian Kelly's rich. Brian Kelly could retire tomorrow. He's fine. He's got pensions from multiple schools. He's fine. He could get a network TV job tomorrow. He's fine. It's not a money move. It's a I want better players move. He's been in the playoff three times. He's been crushed, rolled over by Southern schools with better players. Notre Dame's a tougher job. And he has had his battles. They have not been public, but he has had his battles through the years with a very rigid administration and culture inside Notre Dame. And Brady Quinn on Fox Sports Radio, the former Notre Dame quarterback, talked about it this morning.
I heard some inklings about him being frustrated, LSU missing out on Lincoln Riley, and now coming after Brian Kelly. Because they had heard that Brian Kelly, you know, there was some interest from USC and Brian Kelly. And so if he was interested in USC, it's like, well, why not? You know, let's let LSU open up the checkbook, see if they can give him a bigger contract and see if he'll come down. And so that all started to evolve yesterday. And as that evolved, I started to hear this, like, oh, the facility, oh, about coaches pool for money and all this stuff. But at the end of the day, you don't leave the way he did. I mean, literally out on the road recruiting, leaving a recruit's house after this news breaks and having other coaches out there who are on the road recruiting. You don't leave in a classless way like that after becoming the all-time winningest coach unless there's more to it.
Yeah, there is more to it. Notre Dame's hard. They're needy. They're difficult. They've got a tradition. It's not, you know, Lou Holtz left. Remember that? Lou Holtz could have stayed. Lou Holtz left. Urban Meyer turned it down. Coaches, Urban Meyer, by the way, is not going to Notre Dame. He turned it down once already to go to the South and get better players. So when you leave like this, there's been battles behind the scenes. It's not a money move. He's made his money. He makes a lot of money. You start making $8 million a year, $7 million a year, you're not leaving for eight. Okay, that's just not the way you're doing. It is a get me better players move. And by the way, when Tom Brady, when people, talented people leave, everybody gets transfixed with money. But Tom Brady wanted new He wanted a new challenge. LSU's a new challenge. By the way, Kyle Hamilton is part of a podcast called Inside the Garage. He talked about the sudden move last night.
At the end of the day, I understand he has to do what's best for him and what's best for his family, what he thinks is best for his family. And, I mean, players transfer all the time. I'm not going to say whether or not I think it's a good decision or not. That's up to him. It's not for me to judge. But, I mean, I understand where he's coming from and the situation that he's been in. He's done a lot for the program here, done more than I think anybody expected him to do before he got here. And that's had a big impact on where Notre Dame is now today. I mean, we have had 5 straight 10-win seasons. And that definitely does not happen without him.
Notre Dame is in the best place they've been in since the legend Lou Holtz left. I mean, they're in a great spot, lots of commitments, and kids generally go to Notre Dame for something more than the coach. It's an academic power. It's a massive brand. It's a unique experience. Notre Dame is one of those schools where the coach matters, but you go to it like Stanford. Sometimes it's football is a big part of it, but like half of it. If you want to go to Georgia, a lot of times it's the coach, right? Like, I like my coach. I like my guy that recruits me. But Notre Dame is different that way. And it is a tough job. Brian Kelly told me years ago, it's not a 20-year job. It's not what it is. There are just certain jobs out there that are very demanding. Many of you have jobs. They're not 25-year jobs. You do them, you learn, you move on. Notre Dame is a great job, but taxing. And personnel, easier academic path, don't have to leave the state as much. He inherits. You don't have to rebuild LSU. He had to rebuild Notre Dame. There's no rebuild here. LSU is good enough next year to win the national championship. I don't think they have Georgia personnel, but Georgia's losing half their defense to the NFL. LSU will be in a pool of like 4 of the most talented teams in the country. Notre Dame may be 8th, 12th, 15th, but don't kid yourself. This is not a rebuild. LSU is going to be fine. LSU will be better next year than this year because they're getting a better coach by far.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like. Herd Hierarchy.
Time is now. Let's go.
The top 10 NFL teams according to Colin. Number 10.
Well, I was a little high on Dallas. I have the Cowboys 10. They've lost 3 of 4, and they're 1-4 when held under 100 rushing yards right now. And frankly, Zeke looks a little tired and a little banged up, and Tony Pollard appears to be their best back. I think this is a good football team. Now Mike McCarthy's out. Amari Cooper still has questions. CeeDee Lamb had the concussions. I don't doubt the personnel. But these seasons are long, and they're in a slump. I'll keep them at 10 for now.
Number 9.
The Ravens. When you can throw 4 picks and beat a pretty good roster in Cleveland, you're a good football team. Their defense has held opponents under 20 points in back-to-back games. I trust the staff. I like their defensive front. Lamar can drive me nuts at times, but he is so dynamic that he never loses confidence. They've won 3 of 4 despite some of Lamar's bad halves. Ravens 9.
Number 8.
49ers, I don't care what their record is. This football team is healthy, and you don't want any part of them. It's one of the best coach teams. Elijah Mitchell, what a shock. They go get a running back in the 6th round that he's great. That's what Kyle Shanahan does. By the way, y'all bang on Jimmy Garoppolo. 100-plus passer rating in 5 straight games. Can you give me a break on this guy? I know. He's good-looking. He looks like George Clooney. You're jealous. He's a very, very competent quarterback, and when you give him a running game and a little time on play action, he's money.
Number 7.
Listen, the Titans are struggling. They're falling apart physically. It's a long season. It happens. We know this is well-coached football team. We know it's a good football team, but now you got so many injuries, Ryan Tannehill is asked to carry him. And he's got 2 TDs and 5 picks and a 58 quarterback rating in the last 2 games. They'll be fine. They've got to get healthy.
Number 6.
Buffalo's a fascinating team, and there's part of me that thinks they're the best team in football. Every one of their wins has been by 15-plus points. There's a Mike Tyson quality. If they feel weakness, they pounce on you. But they don't pass block. They have no running game. They're very one-dimensional with Josh Allen. But they are so magnificently dynamic that you can't. You can never look at them as anything other as like Kansas City good. Because if you have weakness, if your O-line struggles, You're going to be running all day from their defensive front.
Number five.
Tampa Bay, they're still the favorite to win this whole thing. Brady's going to win the MVP, leads the NFL in touchdown passes. My concern is, will Gronk be healthy, and will they run the football consistently? Because they'll go months where it's like the running game is a hobby, not a profession. But I have to put them in the top five.
Number four.
Kansas City, four-game winning streak. I think their defense is the key. I think Chris Jones is really the key now to the season. I don't worry about Andy Reid. I don't worry about Mahomes. I don't worry about Travis Kelce. They need a pass rush. They don't run the football. They're not really a physical team, and Chris Jones gives them that dimension. Their defense has had eight takeaways in the last four games. That's the key. They're now taking the ball from you, giving it back to Andy and Mahomes.
Number three.
Arizona. If Kyler Murray's healthy, I want no part of him. He's still not 100% hurt for the second straight year, but they do two things well. They make your quarterback uncomfortable, and their quarterback makes your defense uncomfortable, and that's a big component to football. Very hard to prepare for. I've talked to coaches about this. Big plays everywhere. Playmakers on offense, playmakers on defense. They may be the fastest team in the league.
Number two.
New England. They got a six-game winning streak and an O. Myself included, we all go, well, Mac Jones isn't very athletic. They're averaging 35 points a game. Kendrick Bourne, boy, that was money well spent. Hunter Henry, money well spent. They've also drafted well. Christian Barmore, Ramondre Stevenson, Mac Jones, best coach in football, best defense in football. And by the way, they're plus 13 in turnover differential during their winning streak. That is more than double the next best team. They are just taking the ball away.
Number one.
Green Bay Packers. I've said this for 3 weeks. The ability to win missing starters is amazing. The ability to win missing multiple Pro Bowlers, tight ends, Aaron Jones, running backs, Jair Alexander, the corner, Zadarius Smith. They're missing like four of their best players, and they're going to Arizona and winning. I think it's the most talented team, including the Super Bowl year Green Bay has ever had. Packers, number one.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
There you go. Sorry, Dallas. Loved you. Don't anymore. And with that, I was saying earlier is that I grew up in a small town. And so for me, some of you grow up in New York or L.A. or Chicago, and you don't have to leave. There's jobs there. But my next guest also grew up in a small town. And there's something about when you grow up in a small town, you know at a very early age, you gotta leave to make things happen. And I think it's a great quality. I think America, if you look at many of the great technological advances, our politicians, a lot of small town people are just jumping around. They're mobile. They're taking big risks. They're putting themselves out there. And they end up changing our lives for the better. And Lincoln Riley was once from a small town, and he is now living in Los Angeles. The new USC football coach now joins us live in studio. Let's bring in Lincoln Riley. So I was telling my staff yesterday, fight on. Look at that. Thank you very much, Lincoln. You know, I my staff said this yesterday. They said, listen, Oklahoma's a great job. There's no reason. 99% of coaches in the history of the world would never leave Oklahoma. But there is something about you and your beautiful family and your young girls and that small town thing. And when you grow up in a small town, it becomes part of your life. You got to take some risks. Was that a component to leaving one of the top five jobs for, in my opinion, a top one or two job?
I think that's fair to say. And I would say we've definitely been shaped. Both me and my wife are from small towns. I think we have been shaped by our upbringing and not afraid to take risks if we felt like they were the right opportunities at the right time. And that's essentially what this was. It was very difficult to leave Oklahoma. I love Oklahoma. They were phenomenal. It was nothing about something that Oklahoma wasn't. It was seeing this opportunity for our family, for USC, and what we felt like this program could be that just really intrigued us, and just it felt like the right thing to do and the right opportunity at the right time.
You know, the Pac-12 years ago wanted both Oklahoma and Texas in the conference, and I had said at the time they feel West. I don't I know Oklahoma's part of the South, but I can't get my arms around Oklahoma in the SEC. Getting my arms around progressive Lincoln Riley in the Pac-12, it like fits. You feel like, I mean, that, say what you want about the Pac-12, but a lot of our offenses, Bill Walsh, Don Coryell, Eric Coryell, Chip Kelly, modernized football, 13 seconds a snap. There is something about, you feel like the Pac-12 to me. Does that make sense?
It does. I think when we thought about the fit, both from a football standpoint, I think culturally just for our family, there was nothing about this that was uncomfortable. I agree with you. There's been, obviously, this is an innovative place. It's one of the greatest cities in the world for so many different reasons. And, yeah, hopefully we can bring something to it. You can feel the energy in this city. I mean, we could feel it yesterday as we traveled around, got introduced to so many people, and I think that's something that we'll feed off of and be excited to be a part of.
Listen, Brian Kelly just took an LSU job. A lot of times, I've always defended coaches on this because schools don't give you much of a heads up when they fire you. It's not like you guys in the recruiting wars have to give people a long tarmac on it. When I read the clippings, and I followed this story pretty closely for a month, it was sudden. I didn't hear your name until like three days ago, maybe two. It felt sudden to me. Was it sudden?
It was. It was very sudden. I was totally committed to our team as we made a championship and playoff run, and made that very clear to anybody that was interested. And yeah, we got to Norman late Saturday night, early Sunday morning. Had a conversation that USC had some serious interest, and slept for a couple hours, woke up, had a conversation with the USC people, and you could feel their energy. I mean, you could feel the leadership from the very top is willing to do the things that maybe haven't been done here as of recent to get USC to where it needs to be. And when you combine that commitment from the people in this university with the history, the tradition, the opportunities here at USC, the future is so bright. And just, again, to us, that excitement was tough to ignore.
You know, it is interesting. Programs like this, then there's six or seven. Oklahoma's one of these. Alabama, Ohio State, USC. They're generally not your classic rebuild. They're more of a reboot.
Right.
There are some offensive line personnel issues for USC. But, you haven't seen a ton of the footage, right? You're looking at film right now. Take me to what the process feels like to you, like year one, year two. Are you thinking about that in terms of, okay, this is what we implement first. This is where we go second. Here's our needs third. Or can you patch it up with a transfer portal now much more quickly?
I would say there's a balance of both. Certainly getting the right staff in here is a key priority. There's going to be certain steps that we're going to have to take that are going to take time. It's not going to happen overnight. But at the same time, as you mentioned, there is opportunities to rebuild rosters and to add to rosters and change rosters. There's more opportunities to do that than ever before. There's so many different ways that you can go about it. So I think a big part is having a staff that can be creative, that can look at, hey, here's where the roster's in a great place. Here's where we need to add. Here's where we need to change and adapt. And, again, I think with once all the future recruits and future SC players out there see what we've seen, the commitment and what this place is getting ready to do in terms of going completely all in on this football program, I think that's what sold us. I mean, at the end of the day, that's a big reason why we're here. We saw that. And in some ways, we were kind of like recruits. And so I think when all of these people see what we saw, I think we'll have some great opportunities to add some great Trojans.
Not to be nosy, but take me to the moment you decided to take the job and your wife, and take me to the moment, 6 a.m, 7 a.m, and there's that moment where you're loyal and you got your program and you're being sold something and you're an aspirational person and something flips. And take me to that moment, if you could.
Yeah, I honestly didn't think I would do it. I really didn't. But we had we were interested enough to have a conversation. We had a great conversation with the leadership at SC. And after we got off the call, my wife and I just sat there and we really broke it down. And it was a tough decision. I mean, there is no denying that. I mean, leaving Oakland, not just the quality of program at Oklahoma, but the people there, the relationships, I mean, that was 7 years of my life. You know, that was, we had a historic run there. My second daughter was born there. I mean, we were very entrenched. And so the gravity of not just taking the job and the excitement, but of also knowing what we were leaving was tough, and it was very emotional. But we both believed at the end of the day that this was right. It was right for our family. It was, and so we, despite being nervous and I think apprehensive about having to leave a place like OU, the confidence we had in this place and the opportunity just it outweighed that. And so it was very emotional. It was bittersweet in a lot of ways, but we are thrilled to be here.
By the way, the accolades for a 38-year-old coach, most wins by any Sooner coach first 5 years, most points per game by any Division I coach in the last 40 games coached. I've heard this before. Jimmy Johnson has told me this. Sometimes the best time to reevaluate something personally or on a team is when you're winning. It's easier to send the message after a winning streak. And so you've had so much success, you're not failing it much. Is there anything you look at now as you move to USC and go, you know, this is one thing I'm going to redo? Because you did inherit a program from Bob Stoops, so it had its own inertia.
Absolutely.
Now it's your program. Is there anything you look at and go, oh, you know what, I may do that differently?
Well, I think there's going to be a lot of things about that we did at our program at Oklahoma that I think have been big parts of the success at Oklahoma that we will bring here. But this isn't Oklahoma either. And so I think we have to be flexible and find for us, you know, what works out here. You know, what works for this part of the country, what works for our players and our staff out here. And so I think having a staff that can be very flexible in that is very, very important. I think the first thing to me that comes to mind is the culture and accountability within the program. And again, I'm not judging anything before. For me, it's going to be about these days going forward. But I know enough from being in that program at OU that if you want to have a championship program, if you want to truly compete and be at the top, you better have a locker room that's about that. You know, you better have guys that are about each other, guys that care about the program, guys that want to win, and guys that are able to put that in front of the personal accolades and all the individual needs and wants that are out in the world right now. Because the crazy thing is, when you care about the team and when culture is important and when you just want to win, the individual things come. And you see that with the great players in any sport right now. The majority of the great ones are great team guys, and a lot of their success has started because of that mentality. And so we're going to do everything possible to make sure that when somebody walks into our football program, when somebody gets around our program, they feel that.
You know, Michigan beat Ohio State this weekend, and it was the first Jim Harbaugh team that I felt had a real identity. They always had talent. Michigan's always got talent. But I was like, oh, this is power football. This is a real identity. 7 yards a chunk. When Ohio State can't stop you, you're a good football team. If I said to you what you want USC to be in 2 years, if people go, oh, USC, blank. What football? I want a football brand.
Yeah. You know, I think so many people with the game and the way the game's evolved, you know, talk about the speed, they talk about the throw game, all the flashy plays on the edge. It still comes down to physicality. It still comes down to being dominant at the line of scrimmages. And our best OU teams on both sides of the ball certainly had that. And so that's what – and I think that's what we have to build here. I think it starts with the big guys. It starts with being dominant on the fronts, because that allows you to do all the different things that you want to do from
a
skill
standpoint.
You
like to run the football.
Absolutely. We were – tremendous at it at OU. Is a huge part of our success. It's something we believe in, and defensively the same way. We believe in building it from the front back, and so we're gonna that'll be the approach. But I want people to see us play with an edge. I want people to see a smart football team and a team that plays for each other, and to be great again, to be a championship team. You can't have holes. You can't have weaknesses. You got to be really strong on all sides this day and age, and we certainly are gonna have the opportunity to build that.
Pac-12 has always been, I think, the conference of innovation. I really believe that. There's other conferences that do other things. The Big Ten's always felt like, you know, right in the middle of the country. Like, it's just cold weather football, and there's a certain player that you would recruit. You got to be a tough kid to play in that weather. And the West Coast, it's fast. We got Arizona schools and L.A. schools. And, our cold city is Boulder, Colorado. We don't have all the snow out here. Yeah. It's interesting. I feel your offense and your kind of system works out west. This is not a shot at the SEC, but you didn't get a say on Oklahoma going to the SEC. Was there a little part of that ever that was that in the decision at all, that you're a Big 12 guy and a Big 12 coach and, oh, SEC? Was that part of it?
0%. The leadership at OU was fantastic, communicating with me throughout that process, asked feedback. Certainly not saying I made the decision by any stretch, but I was able to give some feedback and be a part of those discussions. And I think it's going to be a great move for OU. I do. And that had no part of it. This decision really and truly, no matter what anybody thinks on the outside, was about this opportunity for so many different reasons, for my family, for the opportunity that we believed in as far as what USC could be and what we could do to help USC. And it was just the right challenge at the right time. So, no, it had nothing to do with it. I do think what we do is going to translate well out here, and can't wait to get it implemented and started.
Oklahoma recruited Los Angeles very well. You've been, and by the way, Bob did. It's always been something where there's talent here, and when USC and UCLA are down, there's opportunities. When you look right now in this class, because you got about 2 weeks here, right?
Right.
How is the talent in Southern California that you could drive in your car over the next 2 weeks? How is the talent in this state high school football?
Oh, it's tremendous. It's tremendous. I've had a long respect for these players, and no matter where I've been, we've always wanted to come out west and recruit because there is great talent. There's players here that want to be great. There's elite coaches in this area. I mean, you can – and we've had a lot of success, not just in recruiting, but when these guys have gotten to our schools, they've become really, really good football players. And so, no, I love it. I love recruiting out here. Always have a lot of great relationships already. Obviously, it's going to be a huge key to our success at SC, but very confident that, one, the players are out here too, but the second part is we have to build and put something in front of them that says there's no reason to go across the country. There's no reason to go anywhere else. I can get the very best right here in LA.
You've never coached at the Coliseum, have you?
I have not. Yesterday was my first time in there.
Let me tell you something. On a Saturday night when Pete had it rolling, it's different. I mean, don't get me wrong. I've been to almost all these. Will Ferrell's over there, and you got it's such a crazy scene. Because in Los Angeles, it's always been a Laker, Dodger, USC market. It's nothing against the Rams. It's nothing against the Clippers. But it is such a, you know, in big cities in America like New York and Philadelphia, you know, Joy and I think she's from Pittsburgh. That's a pro sports town in Miami. And I'm from, you know, part of the country where it is like pro sports town. It's a remarkable scene in Los Angeles. This city of all these pro sports, when USC is rocking, it is the ticket in town. It's incredible. You're just going to have so much fun. Now, have you met with the players yet?
I have. I got a chance to quickly. You know, obviously, they played a game against Cal this weekend, so trying not to step too much in there, but had a great chance to have an initial meeting with them yesterday.
And will you start watching film on what works, what doesn't?
Yeah, we will. It'll be a great chance for myself and the staff that we've already brought here to have a chance to evaluate them. We'll get to watch them practice a little bit this week, which will be great to start to get an idea of what our roster looks like and get to know these players. And so, it's one great advantage of being here early.
Will you reach out to Pete Carroll? He, by the way, called. I don't know if you were told this. Pete Carroll called USC and was so overjoyed that you were hired. He's like, grand slam. He loved you being hired. Is there anybody, like, would you reach out to Pete?
Oh, 100%. We got to know each other a few years ago. I got to spend a few days with him out in Seattle. He's phenomenal, as everybody knows. So, now he knows this place as well as anybody. So, he is. I've got a long list of people that I can't wait to talk to, but he's certainly at the top.
So, in the next 6 hours, do you get in a car and go visit high schools?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Could I go with you? I'm sorry. I'm a total dork. By the way, Leinart and Reggie Bush. Leinart, he still wants to show you he's got an arm. You're just going to have to tolerate it.
That's okay. I can handle that.
Great meeting you. Great seeing you.
Thanks, Colin. Appreciate it.
Lincoln Riley, new coach at USC. How exciting is that?
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
If you're interesting, you make the show. And people often say, why do you bring up Baker Mayfield? And I said, because his story and his trajectory and his attitude, it's polarizing, it's controversial, he's on a million commercials, he's interesting. And then I'm watching the game Sunday night, and I'm like, he's not that interesting. Joe Burrow now is more interesting in that division. Lamar's more interesting. Lamar throws four picks and he's more interesting. And Justin Herbert and Mahomes and now Mac Jones. It's like, that's just in the AFC. And I said, he's not interesting. He's 28-28 through 56 games. He's on his fourth coach. He's not one of the 10 best players for Cleveland. He's not. He's not one of the 10 best players for that team. Definitely not top five or six. I don't think he's top 10. And so my takeaway is people say, why do you talk about him? And I thought driving in this morning, I thought, that's a good question. Why don't I give those people who say that some fun in our show? So I went to Twitter this morning and I said, I'll make you a deal. I'll give you 30 minutes to vote on Twitter. I did a poll. You tell me, should I talk Baker Mayfield ever again on the show? Now, you vote. It's up to you because I got a lot to talk about. I mean, just today, I didn't have to talk about it. And I said, you vote. And if the answer is yes, then I'll talk about him win or lose. If the answer is no, if he wins 10 games in a row, I'm not talking about him. You decide. You don't get both. You don't get me just talking about if he wins. You know, this show's got a little bit of journalistic integrity. But, and I don't think he's going to win 10 in a row and win the Super Bowl. But you vote and you tell me because I don't find him interesting anymore. And that's really the gateway to get on this show. Are you interesting? I don't talk all college football. I talk Michigan, Ohio State. You know, I talk Alabama, Saban, USC. I talk a handful of programs. I don't talk all NFL teams. I talk the most interesting coaches and quarterbacks and players. So the Twitter poll this morning, I gave people 30 minutes. I said, we got a lot to do today. I'm not going to sit and monitor it all day. I'll give you 30 minutes. 12,000 votes came in 30 minutes. And should I stop talking about Baker? 59% said stop talking and 40% said no. So I'm done talking. Right?
I guess. I mean, I like to read the responses on things like this, too.
Well, though. Yeah.
There's a little pushback.
So
for example, this guy, Dan, said he's the number one overall pick that's underachieving with a good to great team around him. He deserves the talk.
Well, I did talk about him, though. I mean, it's not like I didn't. I did, but now it's 56 games. He's 500. He's not one of their best players. You could argue the coaches don't trust him. He's all banged up. He's not an exhilarating talent like Mahomes or Josh Allen or Lamar or Kyler or Aaron Rodgers, where he's like an exhilarating talent. I'm already getting bored with Matt Stafford. By the way, I don't talk Ryan Tannehill. He's not the centerpiece of his team.
Ryan Tannehill is not the number one overall pick.
I know, but I did serve my time here.
Yeah, you gave him
the juice out of this topic. And my takeaway watching Sunday was, he's just not interesting anymore. I'm over the story because, again, when he was going back and forth and you're going back and forth, but when you win the argument, it's no fun for me anymore. Like Sam Darnold, I lost the argument. So what's the fun of it? I said, I lost the argument. Baker, I won the argument. All right, now they're both boring to me. I like one more than the other as a guy, but it's like, it's okay. I'm not going to hold a grudge. If Baker came on tomorrow, I'd bring him on. I don't care. But now I can't. So if he goes to the Super Bowl, I'm going to have to pretend whoever the other quarterback is, God, I hope it's Aaron Rodgers so I can talk about him. I hope it's Brady. I hope it's somebody big.
No. I mean, if he makes the Super Bowl, I think you can go from being compelling to not being compelling. Cam Newton is an incredibly compelling conversation.
But I don't talk about him
anymore.
But
when he wasn't playing, it's not like we were discussing Cam Newton every day. But then he became relevant again, and then we discussed him again.
Well, I think the audience... Listen, people like to be part of a show. And it was like, this is only one segment. It's only one personality. I mean, I don't need this person to fill my show. Like,
right.
We have plenty of stuff. But it's fun for the audience. I thought, well, you vote. You tell me. And so 60-40, stop talking about him.
People have spoken. We are America's honesty brokers.
Absolutely. I mean, it's not my responsibility to talk about your team. It's your team's responsibility to be interesting and have interesting players. Colin, you talk so much about LA sports. That's because all New York teams stink and most Chicago teams stink and most Dallas teams are not great. If LA stunk and New York teams were all great, when Boston teams were great and I lived out east, I wasn't talking about them because I lived out east. I was talking about because the Red Sox were winning, the Patriots were winning, the Celtics were good. The teams were good. And right now, LA's teams are fascinating. Even they're melting down and with the Rams, it makes it interesting. The Stafford meltdown is kind of interesting.